You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For the first part of this week's installment of our series, Strapped, A Look at Poverty in America, we're joined by epidemiologist Dr. Jane Costello, whose focus is the impact poverty has on mental health, especially among children. For 20 years, she's been conducting the Great Smoky Mountain Study, a longitudinal study of more than 1,400 children in North Carolina, looking at who is susceptible to mental illness, who gets treated, and how rising out of poverty improves the mental health of children and families. Dr. Costello is Associate Director for Research, Center for Child and Family Policy, and Professor of Medical Psychology in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Duke University. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show. Hello.
Thank you very much, Lena.
In what concrete ways does poverty affect mental health?
Well, concretely, it increases risk of a large range of mental illnesses, not all, but a range of them, both at the time when the child is suffering from a mental illness and also later on as an adult. We found that childhood mental illness creates a greater risk for health problems. It reduces the likelihood of higher education and a decent income. It increases a risk of dangerous sexual behavior, and it reduces the young adult's chances of making a good set of social relations, marriage and children and things like that. So the alarming thing that we found is that even if children who had a mental illness grow up to be mentally okay in terms of the fairly strict definition of mental illness, there's still a lingering effect on their functioning in society in general.
Well, is it clear whether poverty causes psychological problems like addiction or depression, or if those problems are what cause poverty?
That's the big question, and it's not yet been answered properly. Though, if you think about it, it's a very difficult question to answer experimentally. You can't really assign people to be poor or not poor and then see whether it has a causal effect on their behavior down the road.
But if you're growing up with parents who are affected by depression or anxiety or addiction, doesn't that put the children at risk for developing similar problems?
Exactly. So the question there is it the parents' mental health problem that have caused the poverty, or is it the poverty that's caused the mental health problems? As you said, it's the question we will ask, but it's a remarkably difficult question to answer clearly one way or the other.
Well, under those circumstances, can you tell us about your Great Smoky Mountain study?
Well, this is interesting. One of the great things about longitudinal research, where you just study the same people over a period of time, is that all sorts of opportunities come up to ask questions that you never thought about at the beginning. And we were just going along doing this study of the risk for emotional and behavioral problems in children in a rural area in North Carolina. And we lucked into an opportunity to test the effect of income on the development of mental health problems. And what happened was that one of the areas we were studying was an American Indian reservation, the Qualla Boundary. And the Indian tribal chief had very kindly given us permission to study the children there as well as the predominantly white surrounding community. And in 1996, the tribe decided to open a casino on the reservation. And then they made a rather remarkable decision that they would give some of the profits from the casino to each individual in the community, each individual who was enrolled as a tribal member. And by each, they meant each, everybody, whether you were poor or rich, whether you were a good person or a bad person, everybody got the same. And over time, it varies from year to year, depending on the profits from the casino. But what it's meaning is round about $4,000 a year per person, which is quite a sizable sum of money, particularly if you're a family. And so because we'd been doing a study for a long time, we were able to look before and after this happened and see whether suddenly acquiring money which enabled a family to move out of poverty quite often actually had effect over time on children's mental health. And this is a very rare opportunity because, as I said, it's very difficult to study things like this in the standard medical randomized controlled trial that we normally use.
Now, this is a Cherokee tribe.
These were the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, yes.
Now, go ahead.
I just wanted to say these are the group of the Cherokee who remained behind or came back to North Carolina after the Trail of Tears in the 19th century.
Otherwise, they'd be in Oklahoma.
Exactly.
Now, when you started, how high was the poverty rate there? Was this a particularly poor area?
It's pretty poor. Over half of the American Indians were living below the federal poverty line, compared with about 20% of the whites.
Has there been access? Go ahead.
No, you asked me your question.
Has there been access to quality mental health care in that area throughout the 20 years that you've been looking at the children?
That was the reason we started the study in that area, was that it had really quite a good mental health care system for children and adolescents. And so that was what we wanted to study. How good is a good system?
Do you look at environmental causes as well as biological causes for mental health?
We try to look at a bit of everything, yes. So we look at biological causes like genes. We look at stress factors like stress biomarkers, things you can see in people's blood that are markers of stress. But then we also look at actual stresses that people tell us about, both severe ones like physical and sexual abuse and less severe ones like moving house very often or living in an overcrowded family or living in an unsafe neighborhood. A whole range of things.
Haven't you found links between low birth weight and depression?
Yes. This, again, was one of those things that we didn't set out to study, but down the road found that we had the data for. We'd asked mothers to tell us about environmental stresses and difficulties during birth and low birth weight, obviously, and early gestational age and things like that. And then when the girls and boys were in their teens, we looked to see whether this any of these early stresses predicted something that has always been very puzzling to the mental health field, which is the fact that depression increases markedly in the early teens in girls, but not in boys. And what we found was that low birth weight had absolutely nothing to do with emotional or behavioral problems in children's childhood. But once they reached their teens, the low birth weight girls were at greatly increased risk of depression. In fact, 38% of the low birth weight girls had a depressive episode between 13 and 16. And this has since been duplicated in other studies. And, of course, low birth weight is associated with poverty.
So that's a measurable psychological impact from growing up poor.
You could say that, yes, indeed.
Now, I'm wondering about your accent. It sounds more, I guess you're in North Carolina, so I should be a surprise.
I can tell you it's a much better thing if you live in North Carolina to have an English accent than to have a Yankee accent.
One of the significant findings, I should tell people who you are again. My guest is Dr. Jane Costello, who is at Duke University. She is the Associate Director for Research at the Center for Child and Family Policy. a professor of medical psychology in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Duke University. And she is talking to us about the impact of poverty on mental health, the first of a two-part look at poverty in America here as part of a series that we're doing called Strapped. One of the significant findings in your study has to do with, as you said, what happened to the Cherokee children after money came to them. Now, was this money all, did it all come in a lump sum, or was it doled out over the course of the year?
When the recipients are children, it's put into a bank account and saved for them until they're 18 if they graduate from high school, or 21 if they don't graduate from high school. The adults get the money twice a year in 2 6-month lumps.
What kinds of problems? Go ahead.
As I said, everybody, just to emphasize, everybody gets the same amount. A newborn baby gets the same amount as a grandpa.
What kinds of problems existed before the casino opened? Did depression, addiction, even crime decrease almost immediately after they started receiving this money?
We measured it over a 4-year period, 4 years before and 4 years afterwards. And what we found was that if a family was comfortably off before the new income came in, the additional income didn't make any difference to rates of emotional and behavioral problems in the children. On the other hand, there were some families who were so poor that even the additional money didn't lift them above the poverty line. And again, we didn't see any impact of the money on the children's mental health. Where we did see it was in those families who were moved out of poverty by this additional income. And in those children, before the casino opened, they had just the same level of problems as the poor children, the permanently poor children. But by the end of the 4 years after the casino opened, they had just as few problems as the permanently, reasonably off families. So we saw a dramatic, statistically dramatic shift in the number of problems in children whose families moved out of poverty. And this applied both to things like depression and anxiety and to conduct problems, to drug abuse and the whole range.
Physical abuse, neglect?
Well, those are things that were done to them rather than... So the question there is, did it affect the parents' behavior rather than the children's behavior? Yeah. Not really, no. We didn't see much effect.
Because those were things that were already part of the parents' behavior before the money showed up. You recently testified before the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, and you told them that your findings showed that we pay now or we pay later.
Right. We've just recently completed a cost-benefit analysis, or rather not me, because I'm not an economist, but a couple of very gifted young economists who work with us. And what they've done is put a cash price on the costs of these emotional and behavioral problems, the cost of the cash supplement, and the cost of looking after people who have emotional and behavioral problems. So things like the costs of crime to the community, the cost of physical and mental illness to the community, the costs of years lost, of income lost, if people don't achieve their academic potential. And when you put all this together and compare it with the $4,000 or $5,000 a year that has been paid out to these people, we found that by age 25, there was a bonus, a benefit, if you like, of at least $3 for every dollar that was paid out in terms of savings to health and criminal justice systems.
Do you have a prediction of the effect of the cuts to the food stamp program in the light of you pay now, you pay later?
I'm not competent to answer that question, but it was fairly robust across nearly all systems. For instance, the number of teen pregnancies was lower in the group that that moved out of poverty, and they had actually less obesity than the other groups. So there are effects all over the system, not just in the mental health system that we were originally looking at. No. Whether they would have, I can't answer your question because this was taking place on an Indian reservation that has all sorts of supports and for people who fall into really serious food hardships and things.
Well, has the Cherokee improvement trickled down to other poor people in the area?
Not that we've noticed. They've done some important things that are not directly related to the family income supplement. For instance, building new gyms and health clinics and trying to improve the quality of the services that the tribe delivers to the community. But I haven't seen an effect outside the reservation.
Dr. Jane Costello has been conducting the Great Smoky Mountains Study for 20 years, a longitudinal study of more than 1,400 children in North Carolina. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's a great pleasure, Leonard.